Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down
at the Roundtable. Welcome back as we continue our recap discussion for the 6th annual NICE project.
Okay, so now let's talk about isolation and othering, which is such an interesting word. I like that. And you know, all four of our books deeply have a lot of isolation and othering elements to them. I start us off a little bit with Dracula. You know, we talked a little bit about how Dracula, this was really the first vampire book. There was one before it, but this is the one that took, you know, culture, pop culture by storm at the time it was published, and from which flows all other vampire lore, legend, books, films, everything since. Would we agree to that?
I definitely think it was the bigger one.
Yeah. And what's happened in the transition of the vampire and pop culture, it's so interesting because we, as the public, throughout these hundreds and hundreds of years, whatever, since the book came out, we have othered Dracula and vampires from the monsters that Dracula originally was to kind of being sexy, romantic, fantasy men, human men and women. There have been some female vampires in movies and books since Dracula. And that's such a crazy, I mean, talk about seduction, you know. We as a audience, as a public, from the time this book came out, was published, we have turned Dracula and vampires into sexy human people. It's just crazy, you know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no. And yeah, the way I would phrase, I agree with you, mm-hmm. is that instead of seeing Dracula and vampires from other than us, mm-hmm. we now see them as us.
Yes.
And in the case of some of the successors,
yeah.
Like in Twilight, mm-hmm. main character wants to become a vampire.
Exactly.
So that's definitely not othering. That's
yeah.
the opposite of othering.
It's become a desired state, like, somehow, you know. And I think that's such an interesting thing that we've done with this story, this horror story that Bram Stoker wrote. We have romanticized it to a point where, you know, many, many times, I can say honestly, in my first marriage, which was very abusive, you know, comparing that man to a monster, to a vampire sucking the life blood out of me, or, you know, and everybody's path that he crossed, and you know, or even, you know, doing the Jekyll and Hyde kind of comparison, the monster character to the human character, that's, you know, it's very common in today's world to use the term vampire as a way to describe a person who, a human person in your life who is sucking your life force out of you by their control issues, their abusive behavior, whatever it is, you know, it's become normal to refer to those kind of people as vampires. And, you know, so that's really interesting. I do think that isolation in Dracula is very profound. I mean, Jonathan's isolation in Dracula's castle leads him to a physical and mental breakdown.
Yep.
Right? We have isolation of Renfield in the insane asylum. Mina gets put kind of in isolation at one point where they don't take her with them. You call them the vampy killing squad, you know.
Yep.
The kill vampy squad.
Kill vampy squad.
Yeah, and sometimes she's right there with them, especially towards the end of the book. But other times she's relegated to, you know, being locked in a bedroom or something where Dracula can't get at her. And, of course, he does get at her. But, you know, so isolation plays a part. And Lucy's whole evolution of being you know, to use your words earlier, seduced by Dracula, that's a very isolating thing because everybody else just thinks she's physically ill, right? But this is happening in her mental and physical self alone with Dracula. That's an isolated, right. An isolated seduction, if you will, or, you know, to use less romantic words, an isolated assault that happens over time, right? So I think that in Dracula, we've got some really good examples of isolation and othering. In Gone with the Wind, certainly we've got a lot. The war is probably the biggest isolating factor in Gone with the Wind. It definitely depicts the Civil War in harsher terms than does Little Women, which takes place at the same time period. And so all of the isolation and terror of war is in some ways better in Gone with the Wind than in Little Women because it's richer, it's fuller, it's darker, it's, you know, more horrific.
It's more realistic.
Yeah, it's more realistic, and it's based on all that research that Margaret Mitchell did. I think especially in relevance to today's world, I'm going to kind of try to tie things into today's world, how Gone with the Wind depicts the Southerners' thoughts leading up to the war and the horrors of war as they're happening are particularly relevant today, again, because due to that kind of the extreme Trump supporters that we're seeing now who are calling for armed revolution and secession due to the landslide, you know, victory of Joe Biden in the presidential election of 2020. It's just kind of creepy and scary to kind of parallel those scenes early on in Gone with the Wind where the Southerners are talking about how they're going to whip the Yankees and all that stuff, and it's like, oh my gosh, that rhetoric is a little too close to home right now. You know, it's just a little bit uncomfortable. But again, it is a way for modern audiences to relate, modern readers, I should say, to, you know, relate to Gone with the Wind and to, you know, delve deeply into those issues. I think in terms of childhood trauma and isolation, our best examples are Jane Eyre and Little Women. Would you agree with that?
Tell me, I absolutely agree with Jane Eyre. Tell me more about how you find the trauma in Little Women.
Well, in Little Women, in the first half of the story, the girls aren't all that old. Father is gone. He's off to war as a chaplain. And at some point, Marmee goes to take care of him. So the girls are alone with a housekeeper. This is, you know, you don't get the sense that they're used to Marmee being gone at all. They are supposed to sort of become more mature and take on a lot of her roles, including caring for the poor, poverty-stricken German immigrants. That's Beth, and Beth is the only one who does it. I think Meg does it a little bit at first, but then she kind of stops going to visit those German immigrants, and it is Beth who takes up that burden and contracts scarlet fever from them. So I feel like there's trauma there. There's trauma of loss of both parents, even if they know it's temporary. The threat of father's dying is there, so that's a traumatic experience for them. That's why Marmee goes to take care of him. They think he's gonna die, you know. The fact that he survives is great and he gets to come home and all that, but there's times in their young lives, especially for Beth and for Amy, they are the two younger sisters, that these are very traumatic experiences. And when Beth is ill from scarlet fever, that is so traumatic for all of them. She is at death's door before they send for Marmee to come home, and it turns out that Lori had sent for her a little earlier, thank God, so she can get there in time and everything. But I mean, there are some very, very poignant traumatic things that these girls go through. Amy falling through the ice, you know, for Joe, who's one of the elder of the four March sisters, a tremendous amount of guilt, you know, at a young age, she has to bear, because Amy falls through the ice, basically because of because of Joe, you know. And so it's very, there's a lot of trauma in there, I thought. And then, of course, the ultimate trauma of Beth dying young and being right. so ill. But we talked about that at great length in prior episodes. But that's what I see as the childhood trauma. And of course, through it all, both in Little Women as in Gone with the Wind, a war is going on. Now, I feel like the war in Little Women is much more whitewashed, and no pun intended, but it's there, than it is in Gone with the Wind. But still, we know there's a war on, right? So these kids, these girls, are, you know, basically growing up during a wartime that the war is in their country. I mean, you and I have experienced wars in our lifetimes, but they're overseas. Our soldiers go fight them over there. This is a civil war. It's happening, you know, in their country. So, I don't know.
Right, and I've never had a relative, like, in my immediate family in war in my lifetime.
I've had, my brother served in the Navy throughout, you know, his entire adult life because he went to the Naval Academy straight out of high school. And so, even though, you know, he as a doctor, he was not on the front battle lines, you know, there's always been that fear until he retired, you know. Whenever a war is going on in our lifetimes, my parents when they were alive and, you know, myself, I mean, we worried about him because sometimes we didn't really know where he was, you know. But he's fine, by the way. But anyway, so I think childhood trauma and war certainly caused isolation in those books. Go ahead.
And I think that now that you've explained, I'm like, oh, you're right. There is a lot of trauma.
And I know. I think of Little Women as being such a sweet little book.
Time, and I'm gonna watch Christian Bale and Winona Ryder.
Yeah.
I have more warm fuzzies.
Right.
Like, oh,
well, we think of it as a sweet little book about four little girls, right? Who grew up
but
to be lovely women.
It's interesting to look at when we talk about isolation. More than the other books, that idea of the importance of the close-knit family
mm-hmm.
and what happens when those close ties are broken for whatever
mm-hmm.
reason.
Yeah, I
and
think
like
we see that with Gone with the Wind,
Amy
too.
Amy is sent away to be with Aunt March when Beth is sick because she needs to stay safe. She hasn't had that disease.
Right.
You know, that's an isolation which,
mm-hmm.
A, is traumatic for her. B, it does also, there's growth that goes on for the characters.
Yes.
When they are isolated. It happens in the second book.
Yes.
Because, you know, Little Women is
mm-hmm.
two books put into one. So
right.
when they're more, you know, young adults.
Right.
And we see that Jo goes to New York and that isolation
after,
causes
especially,
her to grow. So when she comes home and rejoins the family, there has been that growth and she can be an even stronger member of the family.
Right.
Same thing with Amy when she's off in France.
Right.
So I think that idea of the isolation and the rejoining after the isolation are particularly interesting in Little Women.
I think so too. And I think especially for Joe and Amy's characters because they symbolize leaving or being gone when Beth dies. You know, Amy's in France. After Beth dies, Joe goes back to New York. She needs to be, she's got to get away. And both of their characters come back to the family with that loss of that important person. Beth is gone, but they come back to the family and regroup and reform that family unit in really positive ways.
Join us next time as we continue our recap discussion for the 6th annual NICE project.
This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org. We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.